Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Vice Guide to Right Now, your inside look into the best of Vice. It's Monday, March 11th. I'm Sophie Casas. Today, we're welcoming back Paula Ramos, host of the Vice series Latinx, which just launched 4 fantastic new episodes.
This is a story of what it's like to be a trans Latinx migrant in the United States today.
Este es el centro de Beloya.
Yeah, so there is detainees right outside.
It's a journey of fleeing violence and seeking refuge in a country that can be unwelcoming.
Latinx is the gender-neutral alternative to Latino or Latina. By taking away the genderedness of the Spanish language, Latinx stands for all people in that community who struggle to fit into just one identity. It's inclusive and intersectional, and it goes beyond the binary. The Vice series of the same name, Latinx, seeks to tell these very stories. Those that challenge traditional norms and don't necessarily fit neatly into people's assumptions about the Latinx population in America. The host of the show, Paula Ramos, covers a wide range of issues, from the HIV crisis on the Texas-Mexico border, to the meth epidemic in Fresno, to the experiences of trans asylum seekers. Now the series has 4 new episodes out, and they're great. So today I've got Paula Ramos in the studio to talk about this series and the experience making it. Hi, Paula, how are you?
Really good, just freezing in New York.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you for coming back on the show.
Of course, no, happy to be here.
We had you on when your series Latinx first came out at Vice, and now you have 4 new episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start generally about the series. So what is Latinx, the series, all about, and what are some of the issues that you cover?
Yeah, so I think we talked a little bit about it in the first time, but I think I always start with the X and what the X means in this term Latinx, because no one really knows about it. No one really knows what it means. And I think the show is trying to define what that X means, right? Which in our eyes, it's sort of an invitation and an embrace of all the voices, the issues, the stories that aren't typically covered anywhere else. So, you know, we talked about trans Latinos. We talk about Latinos that are being targeted by ICE simply because of their tattoos. We talk about Latinos that are queer, but in the rap scene. So it's basically looking into all the hybrids and the voices that maybe at one point in their lives didn't think they were Latina, but this show is sort of an invitation to them.
Yeah, it's an amazing series. And for those who haven't watched it yet, pause this podcast, go watch it. It's really amazing. For this episode, I want to zoom in on 2 of the episodes of Latinx, just for timing's sake. And let's start with the episode about the meth epidemic in Fresno, California.
This city is actually known to many as the meth capital of the United States. And it also happens to be that about half of its population are Latino. But the thing is, while the rest of the country is focused on what's happening on the U.S.-Mexico border, right, everyone is focused on the larger immigration debate, Latinos here are facing a completely different reality, and that's a meth epidemic. So we came here to understand what's driving this community to this drug, right? What are the factors behind this crisis?
I know this one's gotten a lot of attention. You know, it's a kind of striking image that it paints, and I'm not gonna lie, it was honestly kind of hard to watch. But
me too.
I can imagine. But for our listeners, can you start by telling us what you saw in Fresno? What's happening there? What does it look like? What's happening on the ground?
Yeah. So to me, this story is very interesting because, first of all, to place Fresno on the map, Fresno is inside the Central Valley in California, and it's unlike, at least for me, it was unlike anything I've seen in the rest of the country, right? Because you're talking about the community that literally provides our food every single day, right? Because it's a community of farm workers, it's a community of immigrants, and they're literally picking our food. And that is also a community that is at the intersection of all the issues that are plaguing Latinos, right? So this we focused on meth because there's a highway that goes straight between the border with Mexico and crosses all the way through California straight into the Central Valley, you know, straight into Fresno. Because of this and other issues that we go into the story, Latinos are just have been exposed to this drug, and it is literally ruining their lives. So you see a lot in Fresno. No? You see the drug problem. You see depression. You see the ways that Latinos are coping to get by. So in a way, what you see in the episode is that meth has become a coping mechanism, you know, for a lot of these Latinos that are just trying to make it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that more. So you talked about kind of the geography of Fresno and how that's in part a driving factor of this epidemic there. But then specifically to the Latinx community mm-hmm. in Fresno, what are some of these experiences that are making people susceptible to this type of drug use, and kind of what are the vulnerabilities that you saw?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, Fresno has a huge, very high percentage of Latinos, no? So that to begin with, it doesn't mean that that would make Latinos more prone to the drug, but that just for context. One, for instance, we met farm workers, no? We met Latinos and immigrants that are working in the farms, and sometimes dealing drugs, being involved in handling meth is way more profitable than working in the fields, right? So then meth becomes a job opportunity for some. And for other people, it's intergenerational, right? Their moms, their cousin, their tías, abuelas were exposed to meth. And then when, you know, growing up as a young Latino, this drug becomes an intergenerational problem. We saw that time and time again. And then for some, it simply becomes, as I said before, a way to make life easier, no? A way to forget about the shit and the problems and the depression that comes with getting by as an immigrant, as an undocumented person, or as a Latino with papers. Drugs become this, like, you know, your 2-minute escape from reality. And we saw that.
So how are you seeing that Latinos here are being directly impacted by this meth epidemic that we're seeing?
It's so many different factors compounded into each other yeah. that make the perfect storm. And all you need is that one opportunity to here, try something good. This will take the pain away. This will make you forget all of the other issues that you're facing in life. And if that works the first time, you're gonna keep on chasing it. And then eventually it poisons your life to the point where it starts to feed off of you, and then it starts to feed on the rest of your family. And the next thing you know, the problem is a lot bigger than you are.
In the piece, you talked to a few people who talked about loneliness as kind of really the root of what drove them to find meth in the first place. And I just want to talk about that as an issue that comes with sort of migration and leaving one's family and being separated by a border, you know, working in the fields, having this extremely strenuous work sort of day in and day out, and maybe, you know, not speaking the language, or, you know, all of those factors that come with immigration kind of boil down in this character's life to be mm-hmm. loneliness. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that interaction?
Yeah, I mean, you just described it perfectly. And I think the story is that so many immigrants, you know, so many Latinos come to this country searching for that dream, no? And that is, it sounds cheesy, but that's the reality. Like, no one risks their lives. No one crosses a border. No one leaves everything for nothing. No, it's for a dream. Then they realize that it's not that easy, right? It's not that easy to get by. The color of your skin, your accent, like yourself, just creates all of these barriers around you that make it hard to fulfill that dream. So as you just described perfectly, drugs and meth, which are so cheap, no, that's another thing that we found out. Meth is so cheap. No, meth is so easy to get. It's literally like everywhere. As we walked around Fresno, it was just very evident that it is an extremely easy drug to get a hold of. But because it's so easy, because it's so cheap, it becomes, as I said before, a way to sort of like put a band-aid in all of your problems and make you cope with the reality of being an immigrant in the U.S., particularly in Central Valley, no? And again, like, for more perspective about Central Valley, I was just there last week. The Central Valley not only has a huge meth epidemic, but it has one of the highest rates of toxic air in the country. It has a huge pesticide problem, huge rates of cancer. So it's just all of these issues are concentrated in one region, and it's just hard to breathe, no? It's hard to live.
Yeah, I want to ask you about kind of your personal experience with this piece. I mean, when I saw this doc, like, there are parts of it and images that are kind of like stuck in my brain now. It was, as I said, you know, it was hard to watch, and the sort of brushstrokes you painted were pretty dark. And I'm wondering, you know, you talk to a lot of different people affected by the epidemic. You talk to drug users, former drug users, drug dealers, doctors at a needle exchange. You even talk to law enforcement. And I'm curious if any of those kinds of conversations and relationships you built felt hopeful. Like, did anybody there feel like there's an end in sight, or, you know, we can kind of see how people are going to get through this? Or was it, what was your personal experience being there?
So my gut reaction was no. And I'm nodding my head because no, you leave and you feel helpless.
I guess we all suffer from PTSD, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder, of the reality that we live in. And people are just trying to medicate themselves.
But there were moments, and some interviews, obviously, we were there for 3 or 4 days, so not all of these interviews were in the final piece that you'll see. But what gave me hope was a lot of the children of former meth users that have taken that pain and that experiences and that, like, intergenerational problem and are now literally turning that pain into, like, activism, right? So we did, our last day, we met this incredible leader. Her name is Alicia. Many of her family members are addicted to meth, people that she loves. And it was extremely easy for her to end up being the same as her family. And instead of that, she literally is creating hubs to and small, like, infrastructures to invite other young Latinas and other young, like, Latinx folks to leave sort of that pain and build political power for them, right? So to me, the hope is, like, the younger generation of Latinos that are starting to realize the problems and that are literally, like, just trying to figure out, beyond just coping with this meth epidemic, like, how do we build political power, right? How do we elect, like, good leaders that can see this problem, that can uplift us and mobilize us? And we saw that. We saw a glimpse of that. But that gives me hope. In the moment, like, no, you don't feel it. But when you step back and you hear the voices that are, like, outside, there's, you know, you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good answer. Thank you. I want to sort of wrap up this part of the interview about the Fresno episode just by asking you what your kind of main takeaways were from the experience, or what you want your viewers and our listeners to understand from this episode specifically, and kind of where it fits into the broader Latinx series as well.
I mean, it fits in because, again, it breaks away from this idea that, you know, all Latinos are only focused on immigration, right? This is California. California is a border state. The narrative that you hear in the media, the narrative that you hear everywhere else, is solely focused on immigration. This episode helps you understand that Latinos are dealing with a range of issues, right? Literally issues that are life or death, including meth. So that's the number one takeaway, no? That this is an issue that is impacting their days every single day. And also that there's ways for us to help, right? Like Fresno's a bubble that seems extremely removed from the rest of our lives. And there's many people that I talked to that said, literally would come up to me and say, no one cares about us. Like, no one's talking about these issues. No one's coming here and understanding what we're going through. This doesn't make it, you know, to the sort of national conversations. So the question is for us, not what, with all the resources that we have, what can we do to help? Because I don't have the answer, but I'm sure someone that's listening does have something to say and something to do about this.
Yeah. So let's pivot to another episode in the series, which is about trans asylum seekers. This was an amazing episode. You went to Arizona, just an hour away from the U.S.-Mexico mm-hmm. border, and you met with a group of trans migrants there who had just gotten out of detention. And, you know, it was great how you highlighted how, like, each of these different people had different experiences. They were coming from different countries. They had different reasons for coming to the U.S. But I'm curious in general what kind of the common threads were that you saw in all of their stories that kind of wove them together.
Yeah. I mean, the number one is that they couldn't be who they were if they stayed in their countries. Like, that's the starting point for all of them. Like, they could not be Carolina, who you met. They cannot be Nakai. They cannot be all these, they cannot be themselves if they stayed home. And the reality is that chances are that if they had stayed home, they probably would be dead. The median age for a trans Latina in Central America is 35 years old. It's easier to be a statistic than to live your life, no? So I think that's the common thread, right? That there is no option, you leave. So that's the story, no? The base of the stories of all these, like, incredible women that they leave for similar reasons, but they also, that makes them create a resilience that I've never seen in anyone that I've ever met.
Yeah, it was incredible, and it totally came through in the piece.
We're gonna keep fighting this. We're gonna keep transmigrating. We're gonna keep transgressing borders, and we're not gonna stop.
Another common thread that you highlighted and that I want to talk about is that the first thing that they experienced and saw when they crossed the border was detention. Mm-hmm. They went to the Eloy Detention mm-hmm. Center outside of Tucson. And I want to hear a little bit about what you learned about their experiences in there.
Yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, it's every nightmare and every possible worst scenario that a human can encounter in their life. They have gone through that. They go through that outside of Eloy, and they go through that inside of Eloy.
What does it mean to be a trans Latinx migrant in the United States?
The experience of trans Latinx migrants is one of holding on to your humanity no matter what, and is holding that in extreme amounts of violence, especially if folks have been inside a detention facility. Right now, the mandate of the U.S. government is to place people in detention facilities. That has never been the practice before, and the number of detention facilities growing in this country is outrageous.
In Eloy specifically, that's where we talked to Carolina, who's one of the characters in this story. And it all starts with the fact that, like, she was misgendered, right? Eloy is a detention center that only has male units. And Carolina is a trans Latina. She is a woman. So from the second that Carolina stepped foot in that detention center, she was misgendered. That led to allegedly rape and abuse and physical and mental abuse. So, you know, Carolina spent 3 years of her life inside of those walls. And that's just one story of many. And Carolina at the end, like, I hate to say this, no, but she was privileged enough to leave. There's women like Rosana Hernandez that we discuss in the story that die. Why? Because ICE officials didn't understand how to help her. No, didn't give her the necessary medications to deal with her HIV status, so she died. So people don't measure their life. No, they don't think their life is worthy. They do. So again, it goes to me, it just always goes back to resilience. Now, Carolina had it in her to leave that detention center and make sure that every other woman that came behind her and would have it a little bit better.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the experiences then outside of the detention center, but in the U.S. So the women that you spoke to had, you know, left persecution and discrimination and violence in their own countries. They came to the U.S. They, you know, got thrown in a detention center, you know, for mm-hmm. 3 years more. And then when they were freed, when they got out of the detention center, what have their experiences been like? I know they're all different, but you highlighted the fact that just because they're in the U.S. truly doesn't mean that they're safe from discrimination or that they feel safe at all. Can you talk about that element of the story?
Of course. And I mean, it goes back to the same thread of just immigrants in this country. No, again, you come to this country and the dream is not the dream. In their cases, it's even worse. I don't have the statistics with me right now, but the unemployment rates, the poverty rates, the mental health issues. Like, if you look at the statistics, they're awful. It is extremely hard to be a trans woman in this country. It's even harder if you're a trans Latina. So it's not hard. So what happens? That a lot of them, like Carolina, look to other trans Latinas for support. And that's how they build these incredible, like, communities of support, because they can't find it elsewhere. So Carolina now, like, her job, no, her 9-to-5 job is she started this, like, letter writing effort to go into these detention centers and, like, just show support for other trans Latinas that are there. So it's not easy. That doesn't mean that others don't. No, we also show in the story that there are cases, like, in California where there is awesome companies like Pollo Loco, which is just this place in California where it's a chicken fast food chain. Right, I've eaten there 100 times, but no one knows that they make a huge effort to hire trans Latinas because the CEO knows how hard it is. So it can go either way, but chances are that it's not easy.
This doc, I mean, it highlighted just such incredible resilience and courage. I thought was kind of my broad takeaway from watching it. But I'm curious what your experience, again, personally was meeting all these women and kind of immersing yourself in this story and, you know, what your broad takeaways were.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, it's it has made me completely redefine the word resilience, knowing strength and courage, right? And every time that I think something is hard in my life, every time that any of my loved ones complain, I literally think about Carolina and I think of all those women that I met, because they just don't stop. No, they don't stop because they believe in dignity and they believe that they deserve to live in this life. So they've taken resilience to a level that, as I said before, I have never seen it on anyone else. Where, you know, you're thrown down to the floor and they get back up. They close doors on you. They find another way to open it and they just do not give up. So it's just like a word that even the dictionary hasn't. And I literally always think about this. Like there is no word to describe the strength that they have inside their bodies. So that was my biggest takeaway, that there's a lot for us to learn from them.
Yeah, I'm curious. We haven't talked specifically about the other two episodes in the four episodes that were just released, but just quickly, one is about how ICE is wrongfully targeting Latinx people based on their tattoos. Mm-hmm. The other one is about Cholo rap and that scene. So feel free to bring those episodes mm-hmm. into your answers now, yeah. Even though we didn't talk about them. But I'm curious, out of those four, like, was there one that was more challenging to make than another, either for personal reasons or just because of different elements of the story?
No, I mean, I think they all were. They all were. For all of them, you want to get it right, because in every single one of those four episodes, you're talking about preserving dignity, right? And everyone is fighting at the end of the day, like the trans Latinas, the homo cholos, as they call themselves, the Latinas that are being targeted by ICE. At the end of the day, the thread among all of them is an effort and a fight to preserve dignity. So in all of them, it was important to get that right. In the Homo Cholos episode, you know, it was these incredible like Latinx artists that are queer, but that, you know, they're trying to fit in this like typically male dominant world of rap and hip hop. And it's not easy. So how do you navigate that, right? And in the ICE targeting Latinos, it was the same thing, right? Latinos are just trying to live their life, and something as simple as a tattoo doesn't allow them to do that. So they were all challenging because, again, it's about the most simple thing, no? About dignity. And if you don't get it right, that can have big consequences.
I know this is kind of a weird question because they're all pretty serious topics, but did you have a favorite episode, that just the process of making it or the people that you met?
Yeah, I mean, no, they're all serious, but I think we had fun with everyone. At least for the Homo Cholo one, it was like we met this incredible artist called Deadly. And again, I say homo cholo because he gave me the blessing of using the word homo cholo, but he coined the term homo cholo. So it was awesome because we got access to like the studio and what goes into like creating their verses and their songs and like the interaction between himself and this other artist, Slim. That, you know, that was an awesome experience. Like I had never been in a studio and just, you know, heard music from that close, no? and looked into like what goes into creating, you know, these lyrics. So that was awesome. And yeah. Ridiculo, fuck what they say and fuck what they try. Together in the game, watching bitches cry, and it's all right. I got the homeboy by my side. Y'all motherfuckers will never even dare to fucking try.
So I feel like this series is finding these amazingly, in some cases, amazingly small details that really shed light on broader issues around mm-hmm. kind of the Latinx experience or immigration in general, like the tattoo story, for example, where it's like, you know, it seems seemingly small. It's a story about tattoos and tattoo removal. But I mean, it highlights so much about racial profiling mm-hmm. and xenophobia and racism.
You have gang experts in the law enforcement field that can make any tattoo into a gang-related tattoo. We are being persecuted. And the fact is that a tattoo could cost you your freedom.
I'm curious, like, what holes you think this series is filling in the media?
Yeah, I mean, I think a huge one, the most important one, that it humanizes all of these issues that we typically see as abstract. No, again, when you talk about immigration, when you talk about ICE, these are things that we hear, no? But this, for the first time, I hope, would make someone think twice about how they talk to Latinos in general, right? Just, I think the show just humanizes what it means to be Latinx, no? What it means to live at the intersections of all of these different issues at a time where Latinos are highly politicized, right? Where there are literally, like, there is an administration that is trying to, in very, very, very smart, like, subtle ways, trying to to push them out. This show tries to push them in, right? And makes you see them in a light that is not the negative one that many people want you to see them through.
Yes, yes, I completely agree. And I think it does it pretty successfully. My last question is just kind of about how people have been reacting to the series. I loved it, but I'm curious what kind of feedback you've gotten.
Overall, great. There's a lot of haters online. A lot of people calling me Skrillex because of my haircut. No, I'm kidding. No, but that to me is successful because, again, it goes back to like breaking stereotypes, and they probably want to see a different image of what it means to be Latino. And they probably thought like, oh, a Latina host, like she's going to look this way. I don't. Guess what? I'm Latinx. I'm Latina. Like that doesn't. So that to me is a success. Getting those like most of it has been 90% of it has been positive. The negative parts, I love it. I welcome it because that means that it's making people talk. There's so many commentary with some people that say, like, why does she say Latinx all the time? Why does she say Latino all the time? Guess what? Because you haven't heard enough. So I think it's good. I welcome that.
Awesome. Do we have more episodes to be excited about, or are there more to come?
Yes, there are more to come. We're working on those. There's potentially one where we're going to look into what it means to be a Latino living in the alt-right. So that one will be interesting. Again, Latinos come in very, very different shapes and sizes and also political inclinations.
Wow. Okay. Well, again, for those who haven't watched the series yet, definitely make sure to watch it. You can see it on vice.com. And thank you so much, Paola, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You can watch the full series at vice.com. That's it for now. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure to tune in again on Wednesday for another Vice Guide to Right Now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.